Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. She's just beginning her second term after running unopposed for re-election last November. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and I recommend unopposed for everyone.
I'm sure.
That's a much better campaign.
The ideal for candidates. Well, I wanted to talk to you today mainly about the issue of unfunded mandates, and we've been hearing a lot about them at all levels of political discussion, from the presidential candidates on down to the most local levels, and I wanted to explore the problem of them with you because you've been very vocal about them, and they came up again front and center in the reaction to Governor Cuomo's budget proposal for next year. So let me start with the specifics about this year, and then what I want to do is go back and think about the issue more generally if we can. In his presentation of the budget, the governor put a lot of emphasis on lessening the burden of unfunded mandates on localities, regarding in particular Medicaid and public pensions. So in order to build this up from the ground, could you first tell me briefly, how is it that Medicaid and public pensions put unfunded burdens on county government?
Okay. Very generally speaking, Medicaid is a federal program, and the original mission for Medicaid was to provide health insurance for poor people. And that program, implemented at the federal level, is shared with the states. And in the vast majority of the states, I think it might be 48 of the states, that expense is shared equally between the federal government and the state government. New York took its half and then passed half of that on to the localities. And it's a federal program with minimum rules. And then the states add on to those rules. So New York has a very expensive Medicaid program, and then it shares it with the localities. But the difference is I don't have the ability that the state has to change the rules, to change who can receive it and what the benefits are. We are just simply administering the state's share of that Medicaid. And in Onondaga County, that local share is $107 million. The state picks up more than that at its level, and the federal government picks up half of the total cost. So the cost for Medicaid in Onondaga County right now is a staggering $650 million a year. Local property taxpayers are picking up $107 million, and that compares to our total property tax levy of $148 million. So you can see that if we could get relief on Medicaid, we really could give property tax relief.
And what about public pensions? How do they affect the county government then that way, in the same way?
Well, the pension, what has happened with the pensions, the problem, I think, was caused at the state level because when the stock market was really roaring in the early 90s, the state comptroller did away with an obligation for employees to contribute to those pensions, and now it's come home to roost because that same pension fund is invested in a stock market that hasn't been enjoying those returns. We are obligated. We have a fixed benefit we have to give to retirees, and that has resulted in Onondaga County and the other counties expense going up double-digit increases to where our payroll, our responsibility for pension is 25% of our payroll right now.
And so even though these folks are state employees, you're paying for
them. No, these are county employees that are in the state retirement system.
Okay, that was the piece I wanted to get clear on.
Okay, yep, so they are county employees, but they are in the state retirement system, and the pensions that were very generous were put in place at the state level. The contributions, which are very low, those rules were put in at the state level. And right now we have to give our retirees incredibly generous pensions at the same time that there is no money funding that pension pool, generally speaking. And it's again, on property taxpayers. That is a real problem for municipalities like the city of Syracuse as well.
So the gist then is, in both of these instances, you're implementing aspects and rules of a program that you don't have formal input on, but you've got to pay for. I mean,
You said it exactly right, Grant. We don't have any control over the rules, but we are footing the bill locally.
Okay. Now, let me go over some of the figures for dollar savings in these two areas as claimed by the governor, and I wanted to ask you a question based on that. And if I have something wrong, please correct me. On Medicaid, rather than covering the cost of increases in Medicaid growth in excess of 3%, as is currently the case, what the state is going to do now by 2015 is cover all of the cost of increases in Medicaid growth, and that is projected to save the county about $16 million over the next 5 years. And then in pensions, the change that the governor is putting forward is projected to save Onondaga County $1.6 billion over 30 years, and it's going to do this by essentially changing the pension system for new employees, providing less in terms of contributions, and moving those employees over to a defined contribution plan rather than a defined benefit plan, which is what you were talking about before, in which under this new system, employees would receive about 4 to 6% of their salary each year in contributions. I think I've got that about right.
You have it about right. The only thing is everything is right about the pensions. The dollar amount over 5 years in the Medicaid savings, we're projecting at about $24
million. But
the rest of it you have exactly right.
I was going by one of the press releases of the governor. Well, let me ask you this question then. In the case of Medicaid, the savings are being defined as avoiding future cost increases. And the 30-year savings figure on pensions, while it's big, it seems far less dramatic when you think about a county budget where the yearly budget is about $1.2 billion a year.
Right.
So the question is this really going to address the problem that you were talking about before?
I love programs like this because we can have a real conversation about it, and you can't get these out in 30 seconds. It's complicated, and they're talking about absorbing the growth. So they're not talking about making that $107 million number any smaller, but they're just helping us avoid those increases. Right now, it's capped at 3% increase, but on $107 million compounded annually, you can see that that gets to be very big numbers very quickly. The problem is not going to be solved entirely with this one state budget. And there are people, I think, for political reasons that are just trying to poke those kinds of holes in it. And there is a role for people who don't really have the ability to govern it to be in that bully pulpit role and remind people that this isn't going to solve the problem. I agree with that, but I don't want to derail what is the first concrete step in the right direction that I have seen. So I'm supporting the governor's budget because it can happen, as opposed to some of, you know, people talking about taking Medicaid over entirely. That's a pipe dream. It's an $8 billion expense. The state is not in a position to take that on right now. They can do what the governor has proposed, and that can save property taxpayers in Onondaga County real money. So I'm behind it. It's the first step. We didn't get here, as people have said, in 1 year. We're not getting out in 1 year.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. Well, let me back this up now, and I want to ask a more general question about unfunded mandates, and hopefully it's not too abstract, but from the standpoint of properly running a democracy, what's the problem with them?
No, it's not too abstract. We have home rule, and we have a system of government where we, generally speaking, want localities to decide what is best for them. And in this case, we are simply an administrative arm of the state government. This is a program, Medicaid I'm referring to, that should be administered and paid for at the state level or at the federal level. If you want us as county property taxpayers to foot some of that bill and a significant piece of that bill, then I would say let us put our smart county employees to work and let us see if we can't put the program together to meet that mission of providing health insurance for the poor, but do it far less expensively with far less of the bureaucratic red tape. I brag all the time about the fact that the Maxwell School is here in our community. We have taken advantage of that and gotten a lot of smart grads from here, and I've pitched to the governor, let us untie our hands. Let us put this program together. We will pay for it, but the way it's set up right now is a terrible public policy because you're letting politicians tell special interest groups, yes, I'll do that, yes, I'll do that, yes, I'll do that. They will pay for it over there.
And push it on down.
Right. And there's no incentive for them to tell people no.
Well, let me throw out a couple of the other problems I've heard. Get your reactions to that. One is that when you do it this way, when you set up a system of unfunded mandates, you're tempted to spend more than you should because it's always someone else's money that you're spending.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. You said it better.
And then the other piece of it is that there's a question, too, and you got at this as well, though, about what level of government should be raising the money in terms of the honest kinds of interactions and conversations between elected officials and their constituents. So it sounds like you're getting at that as well.
Right, and I don't think taxpayers probably care at all whether they're paying their money to the local government or to the state government or to the federal government, they don't want you to take more than you need. And when you take a big federal program, run it through the states, and then run it down to the localities, it has become so much more bloated and expensive than it needs to be. So that's my alternative, is either pay for it at the state and federal level or give us some control over it so that we can help local taxpayers. And to put it in perspective, New York State's Medicaid expense is the highest in the country, and the number two most expensive and number three most expensive combined don't total New York State's. New York State is more than California and Texas combined. We have a very bloated, expensive, bureaucratic system, and we ask our property taxpayers to pay for it. That is the simple answer. People ask all the time, how can I go buy a house in North Carolina? It's the same, you know, expense of a house, but the property taxes are 10%. It's because we have to pay for Medicaid with your property tax dollars in New York. That's why you should care about this.
And just as almost an aside, quickly, do you know why this program was set up in this strange way, being one, you know, 48 other states, as you mentioned, fund this in a different mechanism? Why did they do it here in New York this way? Any ideas?
Well, I don't know why other states didn't do it this way. I suppose that's the cynic in me coming out a little bit. But if the state has the ability to make it look like it's being fiscally responsible and lowering its costs, but all it's doing is pushing those costs down to us, from a purely political standpoint, you can see easily why they would do it. But it was a bad public policy.
My guest is Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. Well, I want to stick with this unfunded mandate issue a little bit longer and again, generalize it. The federal government has an unfunded mandate law regarding states, but it's riddled with exceptions, including the two big ones of national security and instances in which the mandate is tied to funding with voluntary participation, which are many of the big ticket items like transportation or Medicaid and education. So, again, the abstract question for you, when do you think is it appropriate for the more expansive or higher level of government to say to a more local level of government that it must do certain things and, furthermore, that it's got to contribute to the funding of doing those certain things? I mean, is that a move that should only be reserved, say, for the protection and enforcement of basic civil rights, for example? When do you do it?
That is a very good question, and I'm sure people would put health care into that category of basic civil rights in many cases. But can they do it the way they do it right now, or could they say from the federal level, you are required to put a program in place that covers this basic level of health care? We debate what the word basic means when we talk about education at the state level. You've seen lawsuits, and I'm sure that, that you know, you could create a mess out of something. But the fact that I have no ability to change the program at all is what is making it so expensive. Mm. I know that I could put some of these smart policy people around me to work to say, wipe the slate clean and tell me how to give health insurance to the people who live in Onondaga County that don't have it. And I think you would come up with a lot more creativity than this burdensome, bloated Medicaid program that came down from the federal government a long time ago. So there are instances, perhaps, where we should be required to provide basic civil rights, but let us decide how to provide those basic civil rights. This Medicaid comes with all of the problems.
Hmm. And I'm also wondering whether you have to look at the entire funding picture rather than pulling out certain programs for criticism. And I was thinking about this, and I was reminded of this scene from The West Wing. It goes back a ways, but
you guys up here like that show.
There's a moment in one of the episodes of The West Wing where President Bartlet is being challenged in a debate by his opponent. I think it was a Republican governor who was challenging him. And he was being challenged regarding unfunded mandates. And he pushed on this, and then the president finally said, all right, basically, let's think about it that way. And then he ticked off all the federal assistance that state had received over the course of the year, and then asked him if the federal government could have that money back, if this is the way we're going to think about it. So from that perspective, does Onondaga County still have a beef with the state if we look at the whole picture?
Yes, and in that example, I think is what politicians get in trouble with is, you know, the federal government's impression that this is their money that they've given us. This is the money that they've collected from people who live here. So it's, again, back to the taxpayer saying, you know, does he care that he's giving his money to the federal government who's giving it back to me? No, he just wants you to take as little as you need to provide the basic civil rights for his neighbors and family and friends.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. Well, I have a couple questions about local politics to finish here. There's been an increasing concern expressed by citizens about the harsh tone of our politics of late, and you see it everywhere, especially at the national level. But here locally, it seems like things may have turned in that direction in the past year or so as well. The DA, the police, the county legislature, the city council, the auditor, the mayor, and you have all been involved in some, shall I say, less than pleasant communications in the media about political nominations, board seats, campaign contributions, investigations. Basically, I just want to ask, what do you think's going on here?
Unfortunately, the tenor starting at the national level, and we're not immune from it here, has been, you know, to make the other side look bad. And it's easy to do that if you, if you don't have good intentions. And I think in some of those instances that you just talked about, it's easy if you're a person of some stature in the community to call the media and tell them anything that you want to tell them. It will generate a story, which is what they want. And I can only really talk specifically about the one that I'm involved in. But I have, I didn't get the right genes probably for this game, but I will not be bullied. And there have been instances where people have tried to get me to do things that I'm not willing to do. And that resulted in a phone call to me last summer from the chairman of the local Republican committee. And there was a very clear threat that if I didn't do as I was being asked to do, that I would be embarrassed. And he painted a picture for me about what he was willing to say. And you can, twist words. And he followed through on the threat. It's as simple as that. Mm. So this idea that I'm in a fight, and I think the police chief feels the same way, we're being shot at. And we can either say no comment and look guilty, or we can try to tell people our side of the story, in which case now we're engaged in an ugly conversation in the media. I don't really have a good option. So I would like people to see that it's not the acrimony. People are so responding to people that are rising above politics and rising above the partisanship and working together. The mayor and I have a good working relationship, and it's not because we think alike. It's because out of respect for the voters, they sent her and they sent me, and they want us to work together. They don't want me to spend my time trying to make her look bad, and that's what we've seen. I'm resisting it, and it is disappointing to me that I'm being painted with the same brush fairly by you, because, my name's in the paper as well. But, this will always happen if you have people whose goal is simply to make the other side look bad.
And I guess I was wondering whether, and you've spoken to this a bit, but has something changed in this area? It sounds like to some degree you're saying the national stuff is trickling down, and then it's the dynamic with the media, and it's sort of a series of certain events that have gotten people to put some of this stuff out there.
Well, Grant, when did being a moderate become an insult? When you see presidential candidates hurling insults at each other that include the word moderate, it's like, when did moderate become an insult? But that has certainly trickled down to the local level. And, I am constantly hearing from people that I'm a rhino, and it's because I look at an issue, I think about it, and I make a decision based on what I think is best for the whole community. And in some, way, the loyalty to the party is supposed to come first. It's not a good way to govern. And I've asked people in my party to respect that.
Well, what you're just saying is a perfect segue into the last question I wanted to ask before we get to the three questions at the end. And it's really about you and politics much more personally. Do you ever wonder whether being a moderate to conservative Democrat might be a better fit for you than a moderate to liberal Republican?
Well, you and I have talked about that book, The Team of Rivals, mm-hmm. and I think that if some of the Republicans would go back and dust off their history books and look at the platform of the Republican Party when it was first created, I am a lot closer to that platform. It's about personal empowerment. It's about basic civil rights. the rights of individuals. Somehow the party has kind of lost its way, and I'm not sure whether that question would be better posed to them, that maybe they should be looking for a different party. But my philosophies are very much the philosophies that the Republican Party was founded on. And, you know, when I look at some of the issues that conservatives have taken, they are 180 degrees away from what a conservative is defined as. You know, we don't want to be in a nanny state, but we want to tell people who they can and can't marry. That's the, you know, I'm not sure the conservatives know what the conservative party is all about sometimes. I think the Republicans are the same. I'm guessing the Democrats are the same. I'm pretty comfortable in the party. I think there are a lot that would love to see me sign my, you know, name a different way, but I'm very comfortable with where I am.
Well, let me try one further push on this, and you may not want to go near this one, but an outside observer might say that, you know, you're in your first year of a second term for which the Democrats put up no opposition against you. You have this great working relationship and support from a very popular Democratic governor. Maybe this might not be such a bad time to think about a move like that.
But I know who I am, and I like it that there are people like the Democratic governor who thinks like I do, that when you're in the position that he's in as governor and I'm in as county executive, there's an amount of respect that you have to give the voters. The voters in Onondaga County put me here. He has to work with me if he has any respect for the people who live here. The idea that, you know, his answer should be first and foremost to the Democratic Party, I think is silly, and it's given us what we have now in the federal government, which is an inability to get anything done.
Well, let me get to the three questions. I asked you these last year, but I'd like to get your take on them again if I could. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I know that I'm supposed to be prepared for these, and I listen to other people answer the questions. But right now I am in work mode. I think my job has become, I constantly try to strike a balance, but it is very much a job right now, and I go to work every day, and I'm trying to solve problems. So I would say the chapter is work mode.
And second, what's your worst trait?
I talk too much. It's probably difficult to have a conversation with me when you have time limits. Is that right?
And third, what achievement in your creative or professional life so far has surprised you the most?
I think being county executive, and I don't think I answered this that way last year. I was talking to my husband recently, and I said, sometimes I take a step back and I think, how did I get here? And, you know, the idea that I'm the county executive sometimes still catches me by surprise.
That was Joni Mahoney, County Executive Mahoney. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University, dedicated to the study and practice of citizenship, leadership, and public governance. Information at maxwell.syr.edu.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, with recording engineer Tom Fazio. Learn more about the Campbell Conversations by visiting our website, wrvo.org.